Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Well, if you're trying to cleanse your body of all the junk food you ate at a party or during the Super Bowl last night, I think you need a doctor, and we've got a good one here. The Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital is Dr. Kevin Most. And good morning to you, Doctor. You know what? I'm reading about this latest study on water, and I'm thinking, well, that's the answer. Just drink a lot of water today. What do you think?
Yeah, that would have been a great study to read yesterday before you did everything else you did. But yeah, you know, we've talked numerous times about the importance of water, and certainly this study just highlights it even more, where it talks a little bit about aging as well and how it's more of an anti-aging mechanism. So we know that if we keep enough water in our systems, our cells stay healthy, it does great for our heart and lungs, and really, probably the most important is how it works with the kidney. And people don't understand the importance of our kidney. They think that that is just for, you know, filtering out waste products, but certainly it also helps us prevent anemia. So certainly this study just, again, highlights, hey, make sure you're drinking enough water. And the next question people always ask is, okay, well, how much should I drink? And that's a tough question to answer. You know, if you look at studies come out of Harvard, at least 6 decent-sized cups of water every day is a good idea. Other people say, you know, you should be closer to 2 liters. So having a thing of water around your desk at all times is not a bad idea.
But you're getting water from different foods and fruits and vegetables, aren't you?
Absolutely. The people don't understand that. You know, what used to be drink 8 cups of water a day. Well, that's how much fluid you need. But like just like you said, if you have even something as simple as oatmeal has water in it, yogurt has water in it, any watermelon, lemons, oranges, bananas, they all have water in it. So you're getting water from other sources than just drinking.
With all the talk about the Super Bowl and gambling, this brings up an interesting topic now. This is actually a chronic illness that's getting worse, and it has a neurological foundation, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, people have to understand the addiction to gambling is very much like the addiction to any drug or alcohol. You know, the body, when a gambler wins a bet, dopamine is released in his brain, and it stimulates the pleasure zone, and he says, oh gosh, I want to do that again. So it certainly is something that we have to understand, that this is not just you know, a one-off person who's trying to do this. We have to understand that there's a genetic component to it as well as a neurologic. And it's important for us as physicians. You know, when you come into the doctor, he's going to ask you, do you smoke? How much do you drink? You know, do you use any other drugs? But we don't ask about gambling, and it's something that we really need to, because gambling right now is accepted and so accessible everywhere. 33 states, you know, have legalized gambling. So we really need to start looking at this from a physician's point of view as well.
And this is a growing problem around Illinois, as reported today, and also around the country, isn't it?
It really is. When you look at Illinois, you know, their estimates are about 400,000 individuals have gambling problems, with, you know, almost double that to be at risk. And, you know, we also have to look at, this is not just the financial impact of this. These individuals suffer from anxiety, from depression, insomnia. And unfortunately, we have many cases of suicide because people have gotten themselves in a financial position causing depression so bad that they've taken their own lives. So certainly it's a medical issue as well as a social issue that we have to be ready to tackle.
It's our Monday morning visit with Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Kevin Most. We're hearing today about an experimental COVID treatment that could be a promising alternative to Paxlovid, according to this study. What do you make of this, Doc?
Yeah, Bob, you know, it's an interesting study. We know how important, and the study you're talking about is the use of interferons, specifically lambda interferons for treatment. And we know how important interferons are. People like, wow, I've never heard of that. But in fact, we use interferons right now, alpha interferons, for hepatitis, for lymphomas, for some leukemias. People who have MS may be given beta interferon to decrease the number of MS outbreaks. So certainly now we found, boy, lambda interferon is great. It works in the lungs great, and it has had great success in the study preventing hospitalizations with individuals. And that's important because Paxlovid has its limitations, right? If you're on blood thinners, we're going to be very hesitant to give it to you. The timing of it is important. So this certainly could be a very interesting one. It's going to come down to, unfortunately, I think, the cost.
And what about the approval process here?
Exactly. So if the FDA approves it, and when the emergency goes away, and what is it, May 10th, I believe, or May 11th is the date that we've set, will that stop the fast track for the approval process for the FDA? Will they have to now go through the full process? So certainly that is going to be one. And as long as it's experimental, insurance companies are going to have the options to not cover the cost of it. Everyone has to remember, the Paxlovid that we're getting right now for free, the federal government purchased, right? They paid $530 per course, and they stockpiled enough of it to slow down the chance of hospitalizations. So certainly once the emergency use authorization and the emergency goes away, now all of a sudden insurance companies are going to be saying, wait a second, Paxlovid is going to probably be in that $800, $900 cost. If we go on interferons, are they going to go similar to what they are for the other costs, which are multiple thousands, whether it's used for hepatitis or for MS? So insurance companies are going to have to make a decision as to what it is. But until it's covered, they always have the out to say it's experimental, it hasn't been proven, therefore we won't cover the cost. But it is amazing. I mean, people have to understand, we make interferons. The body makes interferons. So certainly we have commercial companies that do. But we make all of these in our body. So our body is already tuned up. And essentially what they are is they're just proteins that work to fight off infection and look for, cancers. So it's a fascinating and interesting thing, but it's going to come down to, can you get that cost down to where it's reasonable for individuals?
Sounds like we'll be hearing more about that. Earlier, we were talking about the problems associated with gambling, and now that that's been legalized. And let's talk a little bit about marijuana. That obviously has increased, the use of marijuana, with recreational legalization of it in many states. And I was reading a little about this, and I was surprised to learn about how it affects pain meds, how it affects anesthesia if you're going in for surgery. Talk about that a little bit, Doc.
Yeah, Bob, it's really important. Before, when marijuana wasn't legal, people were kind of hesitant to share that information with their physicians. And certainly we want to make sure that everybody understands the impact of marijuana and how it affects other medications and other treatments. And probably the biggest one you said right there is anesthesia. So we know that people who chronically use marijuana or use it on a regular basis, they may need 2 to 3 times the amount of anesthesia. If you don't let the anesthesiologist know that you are a regular user of marijuana, they're going to go with the standard dosings of anesthesia and then try to figure out, wait, why is this person moving? Why are they awake? So you need to make sure that you share that. And we haven't done enough studies because it hasn't been legal long enough to do some long-term studies to say, is this a THC? Is this a CBD? So individuals that use CBD oil also should be letting their doctors know that they're using this on a regular basis. So it's more about sharing that information so the doctors can be aware. And we also have to understand that marijuana interacts with a lot of medications. So anesthesia and pain medications, certainly big interactions, but it has interactions with about 400 different medications. So if you're on any medication, important to let your doctor know that you're using marijuana. If you are, and if you are, how often you're using it, so he can make arrangements or he can make changes in your medications.
And you're talking about smoking or having the gummies here, same thing?
Exactly, yep. Whether you smoke it, whether you have it in brownies, whether you have it in gummies, we know that the impact of that, whether it's a THC or the CBD portion of it, it does impact that. And, we just changed the anesthesia. It's just really started to push to make sure that they get that information. And we just need to let people know, hey, it's legal now. So you're not trying to hide anything, not that you should hide anything from your physician, but you don't have to hide anything. We're not going to look down on you. We're not going to judge you. It's a legal use of a product, and we just need to know to make sure that we can keep you as a patient as safe as possible.
And I know we've talked about this before. Worth mentioning again, though, if you smoke anything, you inhale any kind of smoke, it's not a great thing for your lungs, is it?
It really isn't. You know, the interesting thing is we haven't seen a large increase in cancer with marijuana. So lung cancer and marijuana, not a big jump like we do with cigarettes. And why? Because there's so many other chemicals in the tobacco that we use to prepare the tobacco for pleasure for people. So it's interesting that cannabis and smoking marijuana does not see a jump in lung cancer as we see in with tobacco, but we certainly see more cases of bronchitis. We see, you know, all the other things that go along with, you know, use of marijuana. People are going to have cases of anxiety, they're going to get dizzy, but bronchitis is probably going to be one of the biggest things.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine, Central DuPage Hospital. We learn something valuable every Monday morning. Thanks. We'll talk to you next week, Doc.
You got it, Bob. Take care. We'll talk soon.